It's always cool to see a photo of a place in your town side by side with a photo of that spot 100 years ago or more. That's the concept behind Then and Now books. Monroe Dodd is the host of Central Standard Friday's history series. His new book, Kansas Then and Now, is his fourth in this genre. The others focused on the Kansas City area. The new book features historical scenes from Kansas plains and prairie, taking us back to the time that the state was still a territory. Susan sat down with Monroe to talk about the book. She asked him how he picked the places to feature.
What came first was a notion of what do we need to do to depict Kansas over time? We know we got to get some pictures of something having to do with grain and something having to do with cattle, something have to do with mineral extraction, the various industries of the state, certainly railroads. It'd be nice to have old West towns because that's part of the look of the thing. Old military days, street scenes and other stuff. That came first, then the finding of the photos. Kansas has a rich photo collections, not only in the State Historical Society archives and at places like KU and Wichita State, but also in the little county historical societies that occur in every county. They've got great photos, images that don't appear anywhere else. The locals knew exactly, understood right away what we wanted, which was, we'd like a great picture from your town or this area that evokes an interesting moment, or that represents an era in history, something that if we took it today, it would be like traveling through time. They got that notion, and they came up with photos for us.
So how long did it take you to get all the photos finished?
We worked about 4 or 5 months traveling to various parts of Kansas and collecting now photos to match the then photos. We were lucky because this was such a mild winter. Driving was easy. It wasn't too cold, and there was no snow to block the views.
How did you know that when you saw the then shot, that when you did the now shot, you were standing in the right place? As I looked at the pictures, I thought, that might really be challenging.
It was challenging on a lot of occasions. If a structure is still standing in the same place as it was 100 years ago, the 100-year-ago structure often had lots of little details and things you can line up the perspective with. But in so many instances, for instance, the Board of Trade building from 1876 right here in Kansas City, right by state line, if you go to that spot today, nothing is the same as it was then. The building has been erased. The stockyards are gone. The street has come in where there used to be just a rail track. It was very difficult to line that up. And we wound up actually pacing it, the distance and the direction from the current Board of Trade building, because you can find old maps that show you where the one we're looking for was and where the current one is. And I paced it off, walking through the building and walking out into the street and through a parking garage and over, figuring there, that's probably where the photographer stood. It's very difficult. Well, it's impossible to know exactly where the photographer stood. I need to mention here that my wife, Jean, took most of the pictures on the project. I held up a computer screen or a printout or something and often had to fend off traffic or warn her of oncoming traffic. While she took the photos, I took the captions. Between us, we came up with the old pictures.
Let's start with one of your picks and my picks, the Lawrence pictures. Let's talk about those. Lawrence was a community, and I didn't even know this, that kept bouncing back from destruction.
That's right. Its city symbol is the phoenix rising from the ashes. The picture we have in the book is from 1863. And it shows Massachusetts Street in Lawrence looking north from what now is called 8th Street. A lot of people who visited Lawrence have visited Mass Street and would know the scene. In the street is a group of people, mostly men, dressed up in what look like heavy coats and long leather boots. They seem to be standing around and talking. It's not that orderly a place at the time. There's boxes and casks and things sitting in the street, and there are cattle wandering in the middle of Massachusetts Street. On the other side are a lot of wood frame buildings. When you look at this scene, you know that at some point William Clark Quantrill and his bushwhacker raiders are going to come over from Missouri and kill 150 folks, but also burn most of those buildings you're looking at in the scene. If this scene, we believe, was from 1863, if it was indeed from that year, then it was only months later, in August of that year, that downtown was left in a smoking ruin because of Quantrill's raid. To stand there today and look at that scene, to know that a lot of those buildings have been replaced, sometimes more than once, by the modern Massachusetts Street, is still to take a little bit of a trip through time. You're still standing there saying, gosh, now I've read about Quantrill all my life. Now I can see what it was he cut down.
Interesting. Now, you have a striking picture of Minnesota Avenue in Kansas City, Kansas. And wow, back then it was bustling and full of people and cars and traffic. And then the Today photo is a stark contrast.
It is. In the late 1960s, there was an effort made to put in a mall in downtown Kansas City, Kansas, along Minnesota Avenue. And it was considered pretty much a failure. It made traffic wind in and out. It made little sculptures and mounds on the street. But merchants departed. Now, downtowns across America were losing merchants and population in the 1960s. And so there were other causes for this. But apparently this mall did not help. The mall has been removed nowadays. But Kansas City, Kansas, that part of downtown has still not revived to the extent it did before. In the 1950s, it showed a streetscape of shops and stores and all kinds of places. You could do most of your shopping right there along Minnesota Avenue, and it's not true today.
Now, in Garnett, you have a picture, a then picture, of a tornado that was shot by an old-fashioned camera.
Old-fashioned in the sense that it had to be on a tripod. Old-fashioned in the sense that it was a wet plate negative, probably, that the photographer had to set up and get down behind his little cloak and move the plate and do all this while a tornado's going by. This was in 1884. It is, to everybody's knowledge, that right now, the first photo ever taken of a tornado in action. Now, today, every time there's a tornado anywhere, there's cell phones and digital video cameras and tornado chasers out. You get to see a tornado nowadays. It's no big deal to have seen the tornado headed toward or past a town. But in 1884, it was a really big deal. This tornado moved across near Garnett, but it didn't go through Garnett. So this photographer named Adams was able to go out on the street, set up his old bulky camera, and take what was the first photograph of a tornado in anywhere in the country.
Another one that we talked about was in Hays, Kansas, which was smack in the middle of the Wild Wild West. Tell me about the picture of Cy Goddard's saloon and dance hall.
There are two soldiers from nearby Fort Hays lying dead on the wooden sidewalk in this picture of the saloon. Now, many of us, especially when we were kids, would visit Wild West mock-up towns where there would be mock battles. The cowboy actors would fire blanks at one another. And we've seen movies where there's gunshots and people supposedly dying. But in all those cases, the actors got up and walked away and went on to another role later. In this case, these two soldiers were indeed dead. It was a Wild West shootout. They'd gotten into a fight with somebody inside Cy Goddard's saloon, and there they were, shot dead, lying on the wooden sidewalk outside. Interesting in this picture is that there's a small boy leaning against a corner of the saloon, sort of staring at them almost wistfully. The same scene today. There's a brick telephone company building there. The sidewalk is concrete. Yeah, there's a plaque over there that says this incident happened, but you would never in a million years guess this was the kind of thing you used to see in movies and TV.
Yeah, I think people don't realize when they see the TV versions that this was really real back then.
Mm-hmm. People really died, and that was real bloodshed.
It's striking that there are some buildings in Kansas that look exactly the way they did back then. I must say they're well built. The Cottonwood Falls Chase County Courthouse. And is that the oldest courthouse that's still standing?
It's the oldest courthouse that I believe that's still standing. It's definitely the oldest one that's been in continuous use as a courthouse for all those years. The early 1870s it was built. It's a landmark in Cottonwood Falls. It's beautifully arranged at the end of a long street, which you can come up and see this thing rising there, ornate Second Empire-style courthouse that looks today. It is one of those pictures where the now is not very much different at all from the then, and it still does the same thing inside. That's rare.
Now, what else is on your list of interesting photos from this book?
I can't pass by without mentioning that there were more than just European-American settlers headed west. There were African-American settlers. In the late 1870s, a group of black people from Kentucky were lured to the west by their – they knew what they were doing. The land dealers, speculators, had told them there would be land for them in northwest Kansas, in a little area in a county called Graham County. And so these people, many of them former slaves, immigrated to this spot in Graham County. They were a little surprised when they arrived to find not a single building and hardly a single tree there. They survived the first winter in the little town they named Nicodemus, in dugouts, essentially, just basically living off the land and off to what food they could get from nearby towns, if there were any, or farmers. They survived that winter, and they began to build a town which was called Nicodemus, which became an exoduster community in northwest Kansas. Their grand
now, when
hope,
you say exoduster community, talk about that for people who may not know what that is.
The exodusters were black people, most of them former slaves from the South, who even when slavery ended realized that life wasn't going to get that much better. There were segregation laws, and the Southern politicians didn't accept people for voting, and all the reasons we know about of late 19th century. People doing that. And so in groups, they moved to the north, some to Kansas City, Kansas, some to Kansas City, Missouri, and some went farther west. And the idea was that there was a great exodus from the south. And when they came to places like Kansas, they found lots of dust. So exodusters probably is the derivation of that term. The town of Nicodemus thrived for a while. Like every town that was built in Kansas, the fondest hope was that the railroad would come through, bring supplies, carry out materials they'd make, give people transportation. But like way too many towns in Kansas that are now ghost towns, the railroad bypassed Nicodemus. Happened a lot of places. And so Nicodemus never had the kind of growth it hoped for. Between the railroad bypassing it in the late 19th century and the Great Depression of the 1930s, the population of Nicodemus dwindled. In our Then and Now book, we show a photo taken by a photographer for the Kansas City Times in the mid-1960s. He and a reporter had gone to do a report on Nicodemus. The photo shows an elderly gentleman named Jerry Scruggs walking along the street right in front of the Masonic Hall, what had been the Masonic Hall and what had been an old store. Jerry Scruggs was 1 year old when that first group of 300 people moved west from Kentucky. He's gone now. So is the Masonic Hall. So is the grocery store. There are a few buildings remaining in Nicodemus, but it has been named a National Historic Site. The Recreation Hall, built in the 1930s, is a museum, which my wife and I went through, Jean and I went through as we did this this book, and it's fascinating. In the last, toward the end of July every year, there's a community celebration in Nicodemus where a lot of people, former residents and descendants of them, come back to celebrate the city of Nicodemus.
So really, your project took you all across the prairies and the plains. What stood out to you just generally as you captured pictures from the present and the past?
What stood out to me was you can't tell Kansas by just driving across it. There's many a town you can race past in a car, and you think, oh, that town only amounts to a couple of gas stations. But then you go into the original town itself, and you find real people in the town beyond the attendance of the gas stations out on the turnpike or the freeway or the two-lane highway, and you suddenly realize there's real people, and you know what? These people are pretty nice. They're very helpful. I like these guys.
Yeah, you point out that because Kansas is such a big state, most people's view of it is in a car window going on Interstate 77, going 75 miles an hour. So they're missing a lot, eh?
That's right. And I am guilty of, for decades, having missed a lot on my way zooming to Colorado or zooming to the South or zooming somewhere and not stopping to pay attention.
Monroe Dodd, thank you for being with us on Casey Kearns.
Thank you.
Monroe Dodd is the author of the new book, Kansas Then and Now. He also hosts a history show here at KCUR on Central Standard Fridays. To see a slideshow of some of the photos he talked about in this interview, go to the KC Currents page of our website at kcur.org.
If you can't listen to all of Casey Kearns today, catch what you missed online in our audio archives. And we've got a podcast. You can find us on iTunes.